I know that in like in my head, it's crazy to think that I wouldn't be like, oh, I want to win a gold. Like, of course I do. I want to win a gold medal. But when it comes down to the day, and like even from now, like the focus is still on the process. The focus is still on the process every day. And then when it comes to the races, like you'll get interviewed and about like winning the gold medal, and it's bringing it back to the process, bringing it back to, and it's funny because each time I do that, and even like speaking with you, it helps me bring it back to the process.
Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. And today's guest is Katie Zavaris, one of the world's top triathletes, competing for Team USA from 2015, finishing fifth. Then each year, climbing a spot for third, second world champion. She is the ITU world champion in triathlon for 2019. Amazing. She has an incredibly strong mind, a great attitude. Listen to her thoughts about process and how she's learned to deal with adversity and getting over obstacles. She is awesome. I hope you enjoy this interview.
We're really grateful for your time after moving, and that always takes up a little bit. And so we talked to Kevin McDowell, who's a former, he's a high-level triathlete, former U.S. champion, and he said this about you: she has a great story and also a great head on her shoulders with a great perspective for life. And I had a glance at your LinkedIn page, which is awesome. It's unassuming in a lot of ways, but awesome also, because this is what it says: swim instructor, student teacher, nanny, and then gold level national team member. If you look at a little bit, then it's world champion is embedded there somewhere. So man, you've had a very interesting past and background to your current, you know, where you are today. And so when you look back, like, what does that look like, you know, where we are today?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the LinkedIn, I was like, oh, that's probably pretty outdated. I haven't looked at it for a little bit, but it's pretty crazy to me, because for me, when I was growing up, like I was swimming, biking, I wasn't swimming, biking. I was swimming. I was playing soccer. I was playing lacrosse. And like my parents got me involved in all types of sports growing up. So when I was younger, I would say my main sports would have been swimming, lacrosse, and soccer. And then partway through my high school, I decided, oh, I don't want to play lacrosse anymore. So I'll run to stay in shape for soccer in the fall. And that was all, I guess, in a way leading to becoming a triathlete. But at that point, like, triathlon really wasn't on my scope. And for me, the opportunity to become a triathlete didn't really come to me until after I graduated college, or well, the very end of my college career and experience. And I was planning to go to be a physical education teacher. I was planning to go to grad school, and USA Triathlon, the collegiate recruitment program, gave me this opportunity where they're like, hey, we think you could be really good at triathlon. Do you want to give it a shot? And I was like, okay, not as easy as that, but like went for it. And when I think back on it, it's just, I could, my life like 10 plus years ago was way, it has changed so much from what I thought it was going to be. And I thought that was a good life. Like, and I still think it probably would have been, but the experiences I've had, I met my husband through triathlon, and I met him in Tijevars, Hungary, but he is American. but like, I wouldn't have gotten to meet him without triathlon. I wouldn't have gotten to meet a ton of people. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. So it's definitely really cool to look back and just see this journey and how, like, because I said yes to an opportunity that arose, it has led to so many great things.
And that's one of the things you've listed, I think, in a Forbes article about embrace the unknown. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, like I think and it's great. It's definitely worthwhile to do right now, because there's a lot of unknowns. But yeah, I think for me, it's kind of stepping away from the way I think life should go. And how in my head it's like, okay, you like go to high school, then you go to college, then you like find a job, you get married, you have kids, and like that line of life like is great for a lot of people, but I also feel like it can be skewed or things can be in a different order and everything will work out and you're not going to know unless you try and pun. but it is really love embracing, it. Embracing that.
And you had what is nothing short of a meteoric rise starting in 2015, climbing a place every year, fourth in 16, third in 17, second in 2018, and then 2019 world champion, and congratulations. So what did you do to find success in triathlon and to improve so effectively, so consistently, so on a steady path of growth?
Well, I think for me, it was really what's helped is when I got into the sport, I was very supported from the very start. So with triathlon, even though it was completely an unknown sport to me, something that I was at the most basic level and like entry to, and like not knowing how to ride in a group, not knowing like you don't wear underwear with your like chamois and your cycling gear, like really like I was very novice in a lot of ways, even though I had a good like strength and aerobic capacity to build off of, but there was a whole bunch of skills that I didn't know. And the fact that USA Triathlon, that they supported me right from the start, got me into a program where like they really taught you the basics and helped you grow, that put me automatically in a place where I felt comfortable but like uncomfortable at the same time to grow and learn, because of course like it's a new sport, I'm not going to know it, so like I was willing to just like go in without like so many expectations of myself. And I think that really helped for me to succeed in the beginning, because it was like, all right, we're going to try this and see how it goes. And there wasn't pressure. There was just like building off of the foundation that I had from previous sports and a previous life, and learning the skills as I go and using those races as like tests and reflections to see where I'm at. And I think that was really helpful, because from there, I then found like a community of people, meaning like I found my coach, who I've now been with since like 2014, and being with Joel Filial, that's who my coach is. We've grown together over these last like 7 years or whatever it's been. And then like we've built off one another, and then having experiences like Rio in 2016, I had had good success going into Rio, but then when at Rio, I was really disappointed with my race. And so then I needed to like reflect on that and learn from that and build my community, build like how was I going to base the like where I was really struggling or where my weaknesses were, to make sure that that didn't happen in the future, and that I was having like a happy, enjoying what I was doing, which I think is a huge part of it, is not just being the best athlete, but also enjoying this process, enjoying the sport and all the experiences that come with it.
And so in Rio, you finished 18th, where at some point, you know, a number of people thought you might be a medal contender, and clearly you grew from that. And I'm wondering if you can tell us, what are some of the things you learned going through that process and implemented to improve?
So like one of the biggest things is going into Rio, they were all talking about this uphill that was like 20%, like it was super steep, but pretty short. And so like that was the big talk of Rio, of the course. Yeah. And then when we got there, like I was like, all right, this hill is like, it's hard, but it's fine. But the downhill was what got me. And for me, the biggest learning curve has been like trying to learning skills on the bike, as I'm strong, but I've been trying to work on the technical skills, as most of our courses have lots of turns and are quite technical. So what I learned from that, because I got really worked up about it and I was like scared and nervous and fearful. And because of that, I was on TV a lot when it came to the Rio Olympics, because I was the last person in the group. So the whole time the broadcasting is like my butt for the whole time, which is not the side of me that I want people to be seeing. I'd much rather be at the front. And because of But because of that, what I learned was it's really important that you not just like work on your weaknesses, but know that you have weaknesses. But when it comes to race day, those weaknesses are slightly irrelevant because you need to be confident in what your strengths are. And so if I take like my mentality from Rio, which was really focused on my fear of the hill and what, like, how am I going to like get that? How am I going to be prepared for that in like 2 days type thing? Whereas in Lausanne, also I had like 4 more years of experience to back me up. But
right.
The race before Lausanne, I had crashed in Tokyo, which is, it's hard thing to go race 2.5 weeks later after a pretty gnarly crash. And from there I went like, okay, well, even if I'm a little reserved on the technical parts, even if I fall back a little bit, like I'm strong enough to catch up after the turns. Like I have like what I might not have in one way, I have a power to limit what effect that would have on my race. And so it was a whole different mindset because it puts me at ease, because it's not like all fear now. It's like, okay, how am I going to handle that? How am I going to change it to make it more, more positive for me? And so like, that's one way, but a huge other part was I'd always worked, I'd kind of worked with sports psychologists before Rio, but it was more in a reactive way. And in the way where like, I'd have something like a race or training session and I'd be like, oh, I'd like freak out or be anxious and be like, okay, now I want to talk to someone. Like yeah, it was much more reactive. Whereas after, right. after Rio, I like basically sent an email to the USOPC and was like, these are my weaknesses. This is like what I'm emotionally like, not great at. Here's like what I want to do. Can you tell me what sports psychologist would be the best with working for me? So I like set out an intention of this is who I am, who would be a match for me, rather than, and like really sought who I thought would be the best person to work with specifically me on these specific things. And so now like 2 hours ago, I just talked to my sports psychologist, Karen Kogan, and like I put them as regular things in my schedule. So like once a month I'll talk to her. And some days I feel like, oh, like, no, I don't really, like, I'm feeling fine. Like, I don't really need to talk to her. But I always keep the appointment. And half the time, like, we at least talk for 30 minutes. It might not be the full hour, but it's nice just to have that consistency so that I never hit that, like, overwhelming point.
And so there's a lot of interesting things there. And I'll flash up a picture here. And it's a picture of, are you seeing it?
Yes.
And if you can tell us about this time, because it feels like it's kind of like an inflection point in your career where you really showed that you'd matured in some way and got through some adversity.
Yeah, so this was a picture after my Tokyo test event crash where I crashed on the bike. I think it was like 2 laps in. I can't even remember, which there's a good reason for that because I hit my head pretty hard. But but it was a big goal for me leading into 2019 to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics during 2019.
Yeah.
And so during that race, I ended up, at some point, it was even on a straight. It was like the silliest mistake ever, but I turned my head. And when I turned my head, my wheel went to the side and I ended up running myself into a barrier and ending my race, breaking my nose, getting stitches in my mouth. Because apparently if you hit your face hard enough, your gums can detach from your teeth on impact. So that's kind of what I'd had. So the Japanese doctors, who were phenomenal, they were, they'd look at my mouth and be like, oh, like you can see the bone, which is funny because like, I had no idea. Like my concern when I left the race site was in the ambulance, like my shoulder and my leg, were really, really hurt, like hurting me. And I was concerned that it was more like bone. I had done something more to my arm and my leg. So at that point, like we had, I'd won the races you listed at the beginning. I set myself up for the world championship, and I'm sitting in the ambulance thinking, not only did I just lose the opportunity to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics in 2019, there's still another opportunity. Well, was supposed to be 2020, but it might be 2021 now. And also, like, did I just really mess up my opportunity to be world champion when I've given myself like a nice buffer of like points lead? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of going through my mind. I am really fortunate because of the community I have around me. Well, okay, fortunate for a lot of reasons. A, nothing was broken. So, well, my nose was broken, but not my shoulder and my leg were fine. My nose and stitches to me. Unfortunately, I've hit my face three times. That was the third time now. So I realized, or I found out, that your face actually heals quite fast and it doesn't really affect training. So besides, I wasn't able to swim for a little bit after the crash because of the impact I'd done to my shoulder, but I was able to get on the bike. I think I got on the bike like the next day in my hotel room. I found that especially after crashes, like the first thing to do is get back on the bike because to not let those doubts creep in and to get comfortable again before you get too timid to get back on the bike. So I always force myself, if something happens, next day, get back on the bike, get used to everything again and not stay off of it because I'm scared I'm going to do something. But also, like, I reached out to my sports psychologist. Normally I have them pre-scheduled. This one I was like, please, are you available? Will you talk to me? And I am like, and she was available. We worked through it. We identified how this crash wasn't a reflection of my skills. It was like, I mean, I crashed on a straight. It's very hard to do. And like, just kind of talk through my different anxieties and nerves. And like with Joel, my coach, he was really good. Well, because he was concerned and he was sensitive to the fact that I just crashed, but also he was really optimistic and really day by day, like bringing me back to the present every time that I might get overwhelmed about like the what ifs of being a world champion or the what ifs of how this was going to, would I even be able to race Lausanne in 2.5 weeks? And by him doing that, it kept me in a state of like, I guess I was just kind of like, okay, like it is what it is. Like we're going to see what we can do each day, and each day we can progress from there. And that was much better than being like, I only have 2.5 weeks to get ready. I only have this much time to like, figure out my emotions and anxieties and nerves and everything from going from having the pressure of like just the normal pressure of trying to perform on a day and do what I needed to do to clinch the world championship. But now it was like, now I have to perform on the day on a technical course on like 2.5 weeks after crashing. And like my whole community around me was so good at just listening, but also like empowering me and helping me to feel like, A, whatever happens is all right, whether you race or not. Like, it's not a reflection of you as a person. There'll be more opportunities, like things like that. But also making sure that they knew that if I was ready, like I was ready. And that crash did not negate the years of work I've put in before that.
So you'd mentioned to me prior that coming out of this, your coach Joel had brought you back to your process. And process is a really big word for you, and it's a really big concept for you. And I'm wondering if you can take us through what that looks like to you.
So for me, I'll start by explaining what I used to think it was versus what I think it is now.
Okay.
Because before Rio, I would say that I was focused on the process. Like, I thought I was. But before Rio, I still had like the intentions of like, oh, I'm going to be like, I felt like I was a medal contender at Rio. Like I think although I was focused on the process, I was also focused a lot more on trying to be the best I could be right away. And if I wasn't perfect, it was a lot more disappointing than how I am now, which is I'm much more focused on being the best person I can be for each day. And each day that looks really differently. And each day I have different skills that I can need to work on and different like kind of concentration points to work on, because now it's more focused on like writing out a list of these are the things that I want to do. I set out intentions for the next day. So I'll write 3 intentions every night before I go to bed and set that for the next day. Or like if I'm doing a workout, it's like, here's an opportunity to work on my descent. My descents is like every single day I get a chance to be better. And I might be like my best on a Wednesday or like a Friday, but I can still try and be better for each moment of every day. And I think that, and also bringing that to races, is going into a race, I used to think a race was a test. Like a race is where we try out everything we did in training, and here's the race, we see how I do. Now I look at a race more as an experiment, where it's like, all right, all the stuff in training definitely prepared me for the race, but the race is still like, we're going to break that down into a process of like, for first buoy focus, try to get out to the first buoy as fast as I can, have an awareness of who the people are around me and what they're doing. Like for transition, like hit transition with an urgency of like, this is where I'm going to really run really fast, depending on the specific course. For the bike, it's a lot of like gearing into corners and positioning. And so I break down like every aspect of the race to have a different goal, a different objective. And if one goes wrong, like that's okay. We're on to the next. There's other objectives in this race for me. And never have I written down in the past couple of years is like podium finish or to win. But it's funny that last year was my most successful year. And besides my annual planner, where it has me put all my goals for the year and next 3 years and 5 years and stuff like that, I haven't written down that was like the goal for that particular race.
Wow. So it's really, if I understand it correctly, you're focused, not necessarily in the moment, rather you're breaking down an overall goal into small achievable goals focused on, I suppose, what you're doing to get to that micro goal, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And like, also there's, I think with the process, there's also an awareness factor of like knowing that stuff might be uncomfortable and unpleasant, but like, that's okay. So like for me, even a goal for, I've started doing a lot more visualization. And so like when I'm visualizing things going into races, I think that really helps me focus on the process, because I'm going through those key things that I'd listed kind of before, but I'm also going through the emotions that I'm going to feel, because I mean, we race enough that I've now look at how I feel before races and can be like, well, like the warm up feels terrible. But that's okay, because the warm up always feels terrible. Like that's part of my visualization. Like, and then you're going to be nervous on the like start line, but it's okay that you're nervous, because it means you care. It means you're ready. Like you're always nervous. Like, so really making the emotional aspect is like expected, because honestly, I can look at trends for my life of like how I feel going into certain things. And over the past couple of years, I've become a lot more aware of it, so that it's not like a surprise and it's not something I create this wall of resistance against, but it's more like, oh, like, here we go again. Like, you know, this feeling, like, it's okay. Like, it's not, and I'm not like feeding into it, but I'm not saying like, no, it's not warranted.
And so this is fascinating. And so You've talked about a book that was impactful on you, Let Your Mind Run. Mm-hmm. And she talks about moving from a place of fear of losing, and then she changes her thinking into being more encouraging, kinder, more resilient. And so it seems like, although, you know, your journey is different, that change in thinking was a pivotal moment in your career.
Yeah, I think just when you start giving yourself a little bit more, not leeway, but just, I can't think of the right word, but just being kinder to yourself, really, and knowing that perfection isn't, not that it's not necessary, but it's not really attainable. And if you want to get the most out of yourself, you just need to try to be the best you can be. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're perfect.
Okay. And so from what I know about you, if I was to make a statement, you tell me if it's something you agree with or disagree with.
Okay.
If I said, okay, so you're reigning triathlon champion and you're headed to the Olympics, I realize there's a qualification process still because we're in this coronavirus time, but forgetting that, you might be considered the favorite to win. And so I'm betting that you would focus on the process in order to deal with that pressure. Would you agree with that, or do you have a different approach?
Definitely agreed.
Okay. And so if I said, okay, so I'm just asking a question here, Katie. Don't get mad, okay? And so if you went to the Olympics and you met all your process goals and you finished second, then that would mean that it was a successful event for you, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so this takes a certain maturity, it sounds like. And is it willfulness not to focus on? Do you have to consciously not think about, you know, sometimes it's described as process versus outcome, the outcome of finishing in a certain position?
Yeah, there's different times where I think it's harder than others. I mean, there's been races that I've won and I haven't been able to check off many of my process goals, which to me, like, yes, I'm happy I won, but this feeling of like, oh, shoot, like, well, how am I going to get these to be, how am I going to get those other goals to be checked off as well? So I think for me, what I've realized is I can only be the best version of myself on that day. And I can mm-hmm. do everything to prepare myself for that. But like the preparation is all, well, I would say like since I was born, like to me, the life I live right now, it's the 31 years before that have prepared me for this. And I think that all builds off one another. And each year that gives me more confidence because I know I'm doing the right work. So by the time it gets to Tokyo, like I know that in my head, it's crazy to think that I wouldn't be like, oh, I want to win a gold. Like, of course I do. I want to win a gold medal. But when it comes down to the day and like even from now, like the focus is still on the process. The focus is still on the process every day. And then when it comes to the races, like you'll get interviewed and about like winning the gold medal, and it's bringing it back to the process, bringing it back to, and it's funny because each time I do that, and even like speaking with you, it helps me bring it back to the process because it's talking about it and then it's doing it. And it's being able to put those two things together to think like, this is where there's meaning and value, because ultimately the outcome doesn't matter if you don't do the process.
These are amazing insights. And so in the past, you've talked in some way, and I might be reaching here, and if there's no connection, that's fine. But in the past, you've mentioned kind of your faith in a way. And I'm wondering if that ties into this in some way.
I would say my faith does tie into it in a big way because, and I would like, so church, like going to church and we do better when we're at home. It's very hard to go to church all the time when we're on the road and traveling and stuff. But what I found is like, it really grounds me when I'm able to actually attend a church that like the message speaks to me. And it's funny because I feel like the biggest thing is just feeling like my things that happened in my life happened for a reason, which I think things have led from one thing to another. And there's certain moments that I think, oh, wow, like that was. So when I was first deciding whether to go to the USA Triathlon Collegiate Recruitment Program, I was actually in church with the family that I babysat for. And we were listening to a homily from the priest. And I was like, this, he's talking to me. And I was like, it was like a very, which is funny because now when I think about it, I'm like, what was that homily about? But I'm pretty sure it was about like, just like going for the things that like scare you and saying yes anyways. And so I had this feeling like listening and I was like, oh, I feel like he's talking to me. And then the woman who I babysat for, Ashley, she looked at me and she says the same thing, like that homily was for you. And it was like a very, just one wow. of those feelings where it's like, I'm a huge person of there are cues in life that like help guide you some way. And there are clues of like, these things mean something and have like a bigger meaning than maybe what they would seem. And that was one of those moments for me where I was like, this is for me. And that's how I took it. I was so mad because this is a tangent, but Joel once gave me this book where it was like, there are no signs. There is only like people make up signs. There are no signs. And I like stopped reading the book because I was like, there are signs. And like, and I've felt them and experienced them. So I think that's probably where like my faith comes in a lot, is just feeling like that I'm being guided by a bigger motive or a bigger being.
Thanks for sharing that. And there's a kind of a line of thinking in coaching that it's not providing advice, perhaps that's considered old school, perhaps. And it's more kind of drawing the self-awareness for the person. And they in some way kind of are able to realize self-awareness and to grow in their own person and maybe to come to realizations on their own. And I'm wondering if, you know, in working with your coach, you seem to have a fairly deep self-awareness. How does that relationship and how does that process look like with your coach?
With Joel, it's been very cool because when I first started with him, I was an athlete who I just followed everything he said, like didn't question anything, just took his training, took his words and just was like, okay, this is what I'm doing. As I've grown as a triathlete and over the years, I've had a lot more conversations with Joel about the training and bring in my kind of feedback to him, and we'll discuss it and he'll ask like, why am I asking about this or why do I want to do this? And I'll give my response. And then like we have conversations versus him just telling me what to do and me just saying, okay. And he'll send me the program each week and he's like, what do you like think of it? How does it look to you? And then I say what I think, and usually it's super minimal, but Joel is someone who definitely, I need to have responsibility as an athlete if I want to continue to progress and get better. And I really, really, really value that in Joel because he's there and he's a fantastic coach because he's helping me grow, not just as an athlete, but as a person. And he's just making me, so I have a lot more responsibility in my training and my career, but he's also really good at bringing it back to, there's also a lot about just being a good person and that being a huge part of sport and what he hopes for all of us.
And so it's some, I've talked to a number of athletes in sports that are kind of individual based. And to a man or a woman, they talk about their team, which is interesting because it's an individual sport. And so when you are in an individual sport like this, what does team look like to you, your coach and whatever other support system that you have or each individual has? What does that dynamic look like?
Well, to me, a team is someone who's going to just build up the other teammates and also be able to flourish themselves. And so I feel like when I went to Joel, a huge part of why I went to Joel was because I was racing at like 2014 Edmonton Grand Final. And I think I realized if I would have been in his group, he would have had 25% of the top 10 women in that race in the Grand Final. And I wanted to learn from them. And I wanted to be put in a place where I would get better because of the people who were surrounding me. And I think it's really cool because I feel like those women on his squad like really helped to help push me and for me to get better. And now I feel like I'm at a point where I'm helping like the people in our squad now that are like, some are the same, but some are different. It's a way for us all to get better. And our team, I think, is amazing because we have some of the best in the world, but we aren't super competitive with one another. We're
really,
we push each other, but not to like, we're not racing each other in training, and we all have a big respect for one another. And also we all are really accepting and like supportive of people doing things independently if they need to. So for instance, I'm a person who like, I do a lot of things either with Tommy, my husband, who also trains with me, and I'll like do some of my easy runs alone. And then I do the core sessions with the group. And then like my swim program looks a little different than people. So it's a huge thing with Joel is also the fact he's able to individualize training plans, like for like 20 some athletes really well, making sure that each athlete is doing what's best for them. So like one of my teammates, Non Stanford from Great Britain, she runs so fast on the track. Like there's no way her workouts would work for me. And so when we're on the track, she's often doing faster intervals with someone else, and I'll be doing a slower interval with Tommy or like other people on our team. But then when it comes to races, our race times are pretty darn similar. And I think it's really neat to look back on that and be like, we have different paths to the same thing. Joel recognized that everybody works together to be better, but then there's also the individualized aspect as well. So it's like so many moving pieces, but I feel so thankful that I'm in a program that really supports that and accepts that.
Wow. It seems like an odd dynamic, but it's amazing that it works in the way it does. And clearly it's helped. And I don't know if this is the race kind of post-race that you're referencing, but there's one amazing thing about you that I haven't come across in any other athlete. And that is you blog in rhyme. and so here, trying to get caught up before I get too behind and while some of the races are fresh in my mind. And then here I notice you're referencing, you know, some different races and you're talking about process and these are some of your, you know, fellow teammates in whatever that means. And what is it about, you seem to have a lot of fun, you know, with your teammates, and here we see with your teammates and also kind of with your career, like you're blogging in rhyme, which I take to be, you might be a bit of a poet, and, and you're kind of drawing lessons kind of in a rich way, if I can say it that way. What's that look like?
Well, I mean, I think I'm getting better with it with each year, is trying to find the balance of being the best version of myself while enjoying what I'm doing, being a professional, and really taking in all the experiences that that I'm being given and the opportunities that I have, because I know I'm very blessed with like a lot of the things that have happened in my life. Like a lot of it's working hard, but some of it's luck. And I'm very thankful that I'm put in a position where I get to try and just do the best I can. And I really want to make sure that all these opportunities that I've been given, I don't waste, you know? And I want to look back at triathlon in a way where I want to have great performances. Like that's huge. I've already accomplished more than I ever thought possible going into triathlon. That doesn't mean I'm not hungry for more. I definitely am. But I also want to look back on it and really appreciate all the friendships I've made, all the places I've gotten to go, especially the fact that I'm able to travel with Tommy, my husband. Like we're together like 24/7, which is a challenge in itself, but it's also amazing that we get to do all this together and that he's part of the reason. Like he trains with me every single day and pushes me in a way that has also been a learning experience, but has been so beneficial for my career as a triathlete. And then like, yeah, just the places we've gotten to go, the cultures we've experienced. Like I want to make sure that whenever I'm done with my career, that there's much more to look back on and be really proud of than just first place or second place or whatever it is.
And it's notable, I'll say, that I don't think there's a single article I've read about you where you don't mention Tommy, and clearly he's a very important part of your support system. And he takes amazing photos, by the way, especially the ones in the water are amazing. And so it's pretty special to have someone that you train with and you're together with, and he's also a support, but also observing, you know, through photography.
Yeah. I mean, so when I first met Tommy, he was also a professional triathlete. He was racing at the race in Tijevars, Hungary. And over the past few years, his role has kind of changed more where he's semi-retired. He races every now and again, and he does really well when he does, but he's really taken to helping me when he's just with me. But when we're with Joel and the rest of the squad, he'll jump in with the other guys. And basically he helps with wherever he's needed, and happily and wholeheartedly. And it's amazing, because when we first started training together, it was terrible because like, I didn't want to listen to him because he was giving me advice, and I'm like, you're not Joel, you're not my coach. Like just be quiet. And like, he didn't know how to communicate to me. I think one of the things about maturing over these last few years for me has been really understanding that, like, first of all, Tommy's advice is like pretty good advice. He knows what he's talking about. And us really working on like the communication, not just as like a couple, but also training partners. And that's been really good for us in every way, because it's helping us to communicate effectively under like the most stress and fatigue there possibly can be. And we've also been able to like manipulate our life to work really well. So like one of the reasons Tommy started working for the ITU and working for Roca was because I had asked for, when he stopped racing, if he could do some job, because I never wanted to race for money. So I wanted to have some income so that it never felt like the drive for me to race was that we would have enough money. So he started doing that. And then when he started working for ITU, it works perfectly, because I don't want him, like when it comes to racing, I like to kind of do my own thing. And we would first do like, he would train with me and he'd be like, okay, when do you want to go run? And he'd ask when I wanted to go run. And I'd say like in 15 minutes. And then I'd be ready in like 5 minutes. And I'd be like getting so annoyed because I had told him that I had told him 15 minutes, but now it was 5 minutes. So I couldn't just be like,
yeah,
come on, it's ready to go. But like, I just wanted to go, like, now that I was ready. And so now he works most of the race weekends, and we rarely see each other. Like, some people, sometimes I'll ask him after the race, oh, like, what did you think? Like, how did I do? Do you have any tips? He's like, I have no idea what happened during the race, because he's like working and taking pictures.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's been so cool to look at. I mean, I said that I like describing myself as evolving, and that's not just in the physical realm. That's also in like me and Tommy's relationship. And I think it's really cool to see how we've grown and how much that's also impacted like the outcomes and the performances.
Wow. And so as we start to wind down here, you know, for all the listeners or the viewers, what's, you know, something, if we're on the Evolutional Leaders and one of your words is evolving, what's a daily habit or a mental attitude that we can all adopt that has helped you that might help other people?
I think just having like those clear goals for the day, setting intentions of like what you hope to conquer or aspire to. And like also knowing that you might fall short of them, and that's okay. Like try something different. So like, one of the things I've been trying to do is like 10 minutes of mindfulness a day, like 10 minutes of just visualization or meditation. And I wasn't checking it off. Like, I have like a weekly checklist. So then I made it 5 minutes, because I'm like, well, if I'm not doing it at 10 minutes, then like I might as well make it more doable for me to do for five. And so like for me, if I get that check mark, like that's like a great start. Like, and now it's like, can I build up off of that? So it's more like, I think sometimes it can be like, oh, you have to do the full thing to be able to consider it a success. But if you're not doing any part of it, like that's not helpful. So try to make the small goals and see for yourself if you can see and create change and like make habits. And then if they don't work, then look back and see like, well, why didn't it work? And what can I change to make it work? It doesn't have to be making it shorter. It could be, well, another thing I do is like take my phone out of the room, so I'm not like waking up on it, and yep, put it in a different room. Because I think, yeah, going the path of the least resistance, there's a lot to be said about that. Trying to make it easier to create new habits for yourself.
That's a great tip to leave off on. And so I'll just wrap this up and just stay on with me on the line here. But Katie, this has been such a pleasure. We wish you all the best in your journey to the next event and qualification and beyond, and the Olympics and whatever it looks like. And we're going to be rooting for you. And how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram, which is, I should change the Instagram because my name is not easy, but KZafira6. and also you can follow me at Katie Zafira's Triathlete on Facebook.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. Katie ends up crashing badly at the Tokyo Test event, but amazing how she got over that and used that as something that drove her and fuel going forward. And then writing three intentions every night for the next day. I love that. Just every day, the chance to get better, the opportunity is there, an attitude of like growth and abundance. And the focus she puts on process, just how integral that is to her being so fast, so fit, to being world champion. So much gratitude to Katie for her time. And if you enjoyed this, I am a speaker and coach, would love to hear from you. I'm at theevolutionofleaders.com. Please like, subscribe, and share. Thank you so much.